Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, subhanallahi wa bihamdihi, subhanallahi al-azim. All praise is due to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, the Lord of the worlds. Peace and salutations upon our beloved master and leader, Nabi Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome to Radio Islam on this Wednesday evening, the 17th of August 2022. My name is Muhammad Ismail, and you are now tuned to the medical program. Inshallah, I will be your host this evening, and we will be discussing the medical field as a career. The medical program is a program that's brought to you by the Islamic Medical Association, a program that's brought to you for the sole purpose of raising awareness, enlightenment, and creating information out there with a band of specialists who we have to come and provide us with some valuable information over the show. So the Islamic Medical Association has undertaken this in conjunction with Radio Islam to create awareness for medical programs, medical conditions. But in tonight's case, we are talking about a career in the medical field. And it's very important because even though I think personally, in my opinion, a lot of students are naturally drawn to the medical field, there may be many reasons for that, but I think we, as growing up, a lot of us are nurtured in a way of caring and to give back to community, you know, and that is always a great thing to have. It's always a great quality to have as a medical professional. So we're going to be discussing as the medical field as a career, because I also feel that maybe our focus might be a little bit narrowed, because we speak about the medical field and immediately someone thinks about private practice, but there are a lot of other options available in the medical field. Our guest this evening, who's going to be giving us some information about the medical field in a career, the medical field as a career, is Sister Maryam Mohammed. She is the president of the South African Medical Association, Medical Student Association, in KZN, and she's the national vice chair of the South African Medical Students Association. Sister Maryam is also a third year medical student, and she will be giving us some information on the medical field as a career. So, if you are someone that's, well, probably in towards the end of your schooling career now, grade 11, grade 12, you're looking for some information regarding the medical field, or you may be considering entering the medical field, this might be the time where you need to sit close to your radio station, and inshallah, we will try and disseminate as much information as we can. We also welcome your questions, your comments. You're welcome to call the station, and you can submit your questions to our engineer, who's on standby. He will be taking your questions on 011-854-1548. So if you have any questions, queries, anything regarding the field of medicine, I mean, which can be quite broad. If you look at it generally, when we look at medicine, people think about just a doctor or GP or maybe a specialist, but there are a lot of other fields that come in, not only with regards to treatment, but we look at rehabilitation, we look at assisting patients in terms of speech, in terms of function, in terms of rehabilitation. There are many, many careers within the medical fraternity, and they're not only, sometimes maybe patients might not be, or students might not be inclined to clinical work, as in consulting patients actively, but they, you could also enter a career into research of medicine or lecturing. So inshallah, we will be listening to Sister Maryam Mohammed, who will be giving us some valuable information. And Sister Maryam, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Jazakallah for having me on tonight's program.
Okay. I mean, you are most You are most welcome. Sister Mariam, I just want to, I received a very, very long CV here, and I don't think I'm going to be able to cover all of it. But Sister Mariam, as mentioned, is a third year medical student. She's got a research placement of 3 years at the Center of HIV and AIDS Research in South Africa. She's a president of the South African Medical Students Association in KZN, the national vice chairperson of the South African Medical Students Association. She's involved in international medical education and research and medical student liaison and representation and community engagement. There's a lot more. Sister Mariam, I think I'm going to hand over to you now. Please tell us a little bit about yourself, your career in medicine, and your extensive experience that you have.
Okay, so just to provide a little perspective as to who I am beyond medical school, I'm someone who is committed to continuous professional development and medical education. I'm in my third year as a research placement at the Center of HIV and AIDS Research in Southern Africa, which is known as CAPRISA. I'm also involved in several international medical education collaboration projects and research looking into incorporating artificial intelligence into medical education. I also take part in medical student liaison and representation. Basically, I think we've covered everything to do with myself. So if we have any questions with regards to, you know, the medical career itself, I don't mind starting to answer a bit of those questions.
Okay, Jazakallah for that, Sister Mariam. We're talking today as the medical field as a career, and I think our target audience is basically everyone, but in specific, we want to target young students coming towards the end of their schooling career, looking for a possible career in medicine, or maybe even not even considering medicine, but obviously we would like to present the image of what a career in medicine is like. I just want to find out a little bit about yourself. You say you're a third year medical student. What drove you in your school days to pursue a career in medicine, or to even walk in that direction and apply for a career in medicine?
Okay, so initially I was interested in history and politics, as well as a little bit of physics. And, you know, when I made my final decision in my matric year, although it wasn't quite difficult, as I've always wanted to study medicine, you know, it did take a bit of thought. And, you know, when you're in the world of politics and, you know, socioeconomic issues, you tend to realize that the world is ever consumed by ill acts and vices, war crimes, atrocities, and just generally speaking, hardship. But medicine to me was the one career that I perceived as one in which you can be assured that you are offered an opportunity every single day to counteract this and to extend a helping hand and provide relief through the will of Allah, of course. So the job satisfaction that medicine yields, at least for me, is perceived as unparalleled. It's easy to believe in, you know, this glamorous narrative of what it means to be a doctor. But at the true heart of it, you're able to assume the role of that one individual who is capable of withstanding not only your patient's dependency, grief, fear, and pain, but your own fear. And the difference between medicine and any other career is that anyone can provide relief in various ways through, you know, various careers. But it is in the field of medicine where passivity is non-existent. You know, you're focused to look ill health and vulnerability in the face and still perform life-saving actions whilst doing that. And that is not an easy task. It takes a special kind of a makeup to withstand that pressure. But I believe if Allah has blessed you with the knowledge, makeup, and skill, as well as the support systems, that, you know, you should seize that opportunity and use it to service mankind.
Definitely, Sister Mariam. You did mention a few words, I think, that really resounded with me very well. I think a service to mankind is very, very important. And it's something that you've got to have a passion for, you know. It's something that you have to be passionate about. You have to have empathy as well. to your patients and to people around you, and that will to want to make a difference. I mean, we might not be able to change the entire world, but if each of us make a small difference, at the end of the day, the world will change. Why should students be encouraged to pursue medicine or career in the medical field?
So if you're someone who is naturally, you know, of a caring or nurturing character, it is definitely a field to consider. I think one of the most important things to take cognizance of is that medicine enables you, or opens up rather a wide variety of career options beyond the doctor-patient relationship that we've come to know so well. You can basically travel anywhere with medicine and work within almost any sector. So the job prospectus is extremely multifaceted. You know, you can be passionate about medicine as well as, you know, other fields such as, artificial intelligence, for example, or even agriculture, because the Department of Public Health and Agriculture often work together. That's just an example. So if you choose medicine, you definitely are, broadening your horizons when it comes to job prospectus. So that is definitely an important factor.
Definitely. So, you did mention about artificial intelligence and agriculture. If you could please elaborate a little bit about this. And my aim for this is that there may be a lot of us out there who probably would be inclined to medicine, but probably not inclined to the high pressure of sitting with patients, dealing with patients, maybe performing surgeries, and then would like maybe a non-clinical part of a non-clinical medical career. In what ways would a medical career lead one to artificial intelligence or agriculture?
Okay, so just to start off with an example, if you have a communicable disease, or basically a disease that's spread from person to person, or a contagious disease, for example, we have bilharzia, with snails in rivers that transmit a specific kind of a disease, doctors would have to collaborate with the Department of Health as well as the Department of Agriculture in order to ensure that our farmers, implement proper irrigation systems and proper farming methods that enable us to control the vector, which is the snail. And those kinds of doctors would be our epidemiologists, which is just a very fancy way of describing a doctor that deals with disease etiology or causation, as well as transmission and ways in which we can mitigate the spread of infection of diseases. And that's just one of the examples of a doctor that, you know, does not have patient contact, but is more inclined towards research and statistics, and basically leading us to understand disease transmission and how we can control that. Those kinds of doctors would have been at the forefront of the COVID-19 response, for example. And those aren't necessarily the doctors that you see in hospitals or in clinics or, you know, your GP kind of doctors, but nevertheless, they are quite important. You mentioned also artificial intelligence. That is just another very broad example. For example, we could talk about how doctors or surgeons are becoming increasingly reliant on artificial intelligence in performing surgeries with robotics. Or we could even go the route of looking at medical education and how, especially considering that a lot of education has gone online since the COVID-19 pandemic, we've been looking at how to incorporate more technologically driven medical education methods within our curriculum. For example, simulated patients. There's a special group of medical educators that actually work with computer scientists and programmers to develop software that can actually be used to teach not only students within the context of a pandemic, but now that we're out of a pandemic, they're actually finding it to be suitable to train doctors that are in war situations, such as in Ukraine, or you know, even as far as going, even to go as far as saying to train doctors that are being trained in faraway places like a space station base. So these are actual career fields that are, you know, coming into existence that might not have existed 5 years ago. So the field of that is just, you know, the recent developments within the medical career, but there are ample other you know, subspecialties that would not require you to interact with the patient.
All right, and I think that's important because most of the time I think we're just very pinpoint focused on medicine or becoming a doctor, going to a practice and working there for the rest of our lives. And I think it actually is very enlightening to know that there is so much of areas where one can actually grow and develop. If, for instance, even for our colleagues out there who have maybe grown tired of practice or no longer want to practice anymore or cannot practice anymore, I think it's very important to highlight that. What type of person would be someone that is best suited for a career in medicine?
So much to the contrary of what our society perceives as the core characteristic of the perfect medical professional, academic prowess is but a fraction of the makeup of a doctor. Although it does indeed help to have a doctor that displays a certain level of academic rigor or competency, the other characteristics of a doctor are what ultimately contributes towards defining medical excellency. To be plain spoken, there are many candidates applying for admissions into the medical degree, all of whom have attained stellar academic records. But the distinguished candidates and the ones that perpetuate excellency even after admissions are the individuals that are honest, compassionate, genuine, and self-motivated. And these sound cliche, right? So what exactly does that mean? Well, integrity or honesty in medical school is a significant factor, and that is, to me, doing the right thing when nobody is watching. And that is essentially the unspoken narrative in medical school and even in practice. We're talking about a population of individuals that are high-functioning individuals, overachievers, you know, competitive individuals. Consequently, institutions and senior authority figures, your academia, they expect excellency without supervision or motivation. So it's easy to get into medical school and study the bare minimum and do the bare minimum and forget about the rest. But I always think, if I had a doctor, what would I want from them? And the answer to that is, you know, I want a doctor who goes the extra mile. There is nobody in medical school who will tell you to do this, reward you for doing it, or punish you for not doing it. There is no overt accountability in this sense. Hence why I say you have to have a high degree of integrity, because you have to be motivated to help others, even if there is nothing in it for you. Secondly, you have to be able to accept failure. So we often, when we think about our doctors and medical students, we think about, you know, these straight A students, these perfectionists. But when you encounter setbacks, which you inevitably will, you have to want a career in medicine enough to treat failure and challenges as a learnable moment, to relinquish perfectionism, do your best, and leave the rest to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And for type A personalities, that is a learning curve. So when considering medicine, you have to be sure that you're able to cope with that. You have to be committed to medicine. You've got to live, breathe, dream, eat, sleep, think, and embody medicine, and be committed to the art of healing and helping others through the mercy and will of Allah, of course. Lastly, it's important to remember that in the Quran it says, وَإِذَا مَرِضْتُ فَهُوَ يَشْفِينِ, and that means, when I'm ill, it is Allah who cures me. And the way I interpret that is, as a medical student and future doctor, you can treat a patient, but it is only through the will of Allah that a patient is cured. And that lends to my next characteristic, which is humility. You know, the world of academia and medicine is teeming with individuals that harbor a lot of power and respect. But the best of those are those, you know, doctors and medical students that remember that, you know, learning never ends. You have to possess the ability to listen, to learn and grow and be corrected, and put your patient at the center of diagnosis and management, even if it means that you do not have all the answers, because the doctor is but a vessel through which Allah chooses to heal. So yes, I would say academics are definitely important. Problem solving is an invaluable, central, and recurring theme, but it does not alone define the makeup of a doctor.
Wow, that was very, very beautifully put. Yeah, definitely have to agree. I think integrity, first and foremost, is one of the most important things. Humility, and not forgetting that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is the supreme being who is in control of everything, and He gives sickness and He gives cure. Well, you mentioned about academic results and how some people with the most fantastic results may have applied and may have been rejected. We're going to take a short break soon, and when we come back, we're going to be exploring the options for our students out there who may want to pursue a career in medicine but may not necessarily have the or may not think that they have the best results. And then we will go deeper into what prospects are there for newly graduated medical students. Again, this is the, are you listening to the medical program on Radio Islam International? It's brought to you by the Islamic Medical Association. We'll go for a short ad break and we'll be back with you shortly. Welcome back. You tuned to Radio Islam International, and this is the medical program. We have a guest with us, Sister Maryam Muhammad, or she's the president of the South African Medical Students Association, and we are discussing with her about a career in medicine. So what we've spoken about over the last half an hour, we've spoken about how what it takes to be to be inclined, or what it takes to pursue a career in medicine, where you need to be someone who has integrity and someone who has a will for service to mankind. Now, what I want to discuss is what other options are there available? And Sister Maryam, I want to put this scenario to you. If there is someone out there who is in matric or grade 12 and they perhaps don't possess the 7 A's or 8 A results that are required to gain entry into medicine, what career options are there available for students like that?
Okay, so from my experience within the university where I study, you could study a medical science degree majoring in anatomy or physiology, which are two popular choices to major in. Some students state that they prefer anatomy over physiology, but we reach the consensus that does depend solely on a student's personal preference. Another option would also be to study pharmacy. Now, these students would either study for 1 year within those degrees and then do something called an internal transfer, which is basically applying to the institution in which you're already enrolled to transfer from the degree that you're studying, which in that case would be a BSc or pharmacy. And, you would request a transfer into medicine. And for some people, this happens after the first year. Other people go on to finish the entire BSc degree, as well as the honors and masters, and then only get in. Some people study pharmacy and get in after 1 year. Others get in after the completion of their pharmacy degree, and they would start back from year one. Now, having said that, you do not exclusively have to study a BSc, nor do you have to exclusively major in anatomy or physiology. That is just, the example and what seems to be the popular choice at the moment. You can basically study any degree and stand a chance of getting in, because I do know of people that have studied a degree as far out as engineering and still managed to get into medicine. So there are options. It's just that others stand you a better chance of being accepted than other degrees. Now, looking at other universities, generally from what is out there, for example, if you look at the University of Sefako Makato, you could take the route of studying a BSc and applying after the first year. And if you don't get in, you generally complete your BSc. And quite a few students are able to gap into the medical program within SMU in that manner. SMU also offers an extended medical program over 7 years instead of six. In other universities, such as in Stellenbosch or UP or WITS, Rather, which is a bit different, but I'll explain that a bit later. The second option would be to complete a BSc in Human Life Sciences, and they take around 10 students after the first year, and a few more students who complete the entire 3-year degree. But in any institution, I think it's important to note that internal transfers, generally those students that are transferring within the Department of Health Sciences, they generally stand a higher chance of gapping into the medical program than if you were attempting an external transfer, though it's not impossible. In WITS, there is something called a GEMP program for postgrads, whereby they basically study a few years of basic sciences and medical sciences, and then they may gap into the third year of the medical program upon completion of that undergrad. However, students cannot gap into medical school after third year in WITS. So those are your options.
All right. Okay. And we suppose that one does make it into medical school and they reach the point where they graduate. What employment prospects exist for newly graduated medical professionals?
Okay. So the first option is to continue working within the public health sector as a general practitioner. Your second option would obviously be to go into private practice. Your third option would be branching off into lecturing, and one may assume such a role with or without an added degree or diploma. Medical education is a thriving branch that has increasingly gained acknowledgement of its importance in rectifying the inadequacies within our healthcare system. So as a medical doctor, you will often find yourself teaching junior colleagues and nurses at the bedside of the patient, and this becomes even more necessary if you are working at a tertiary facility that is attached to a medical institution. So to facilitate your teaching ability, most medical institutions do offer a degree or a diploma in health professions education. You will be required to do research regarding a specific teaching methodology to enhance evidence-based teaching practice. So at some point, I guess you could say it becomes necessary to obtain a master's in medical education and later on a PhD, especially if you want to elevate your position within your institution as a medical educationalist. Fourthly, one could branch off into research, which we did briefly touch on. This need not be done exclusively. A doctor can simultaneously work with patients as well as take up research part-time. Research opportunities are presented by several companies and organizations or research bodies, examples being CAPRISA that I did mention earlier, which is the Center of HIV and AIDS Research in Southern Africa. You could also work in the National Research Foundation or within a pharmaceutical company such as Johnson & Johnson, which we know, was quite a key player in the development of the COVID-19 vaccine. And these are just examples amongst many others. Considering a career in research begins as a medical student. And in South Africa, we are lucky enough that every institution does incorporate a research project or module into their curriculum, thus enabling our students to begin our research journeys from the very beginning. Lastly, you could choose to specialize, but specialization is its whole process. There's a whole process on its own. So specialization does not limit you to clinical hands-on work. It could be anything from cardiothoracic surgery to radiology or epidemiology that requires minimal patient exposure. I think it's safe to say we could sit here through the night if I had to list every specialty, so I won't. A quick Google would, clear you up on each specialty. Instead, I'll look at the common process that one would follow in specialization. So I think one thing that I have to clarify is that every individual studying medicine has to become a general physician first. There are no ways to circumvent the 6-year step, unfortunately. So first you would complete your 6 years, and then you would do your 2-year internship. Thereafter, you would apply for something called a medical officer post, which is like a non-training job within a public health facility. And during your time as a medical officer, you would have to write something called the Fellowship of the College of Medicine or Surgery's primary exam. And only if you pass that exam, then you would become eligible to be something called a registrar. But that acceptance depends on a multitude of factors, depending on your chosen specialty. And as a registrar, you will have to obtain your training placement. Thereafter, you would have to go on to complete a concurrent master's degree whilst you're a registrar, and that's called a Master of Medicine's degree. And depending on the specialty, some programs have an additional intermediate exam that you would have to complete. And lastly, you would have to finish off with your fellowship exam. Then only will you be for a consultant. And this whole process of specialization takes an additional 4 to 6 years. And then only would you be considered a fully qualified specialist. And then even going a step beyond that, we have super specialties or subspecialties that require even further study. And just a few examples of these are advanced hepatology and transplantation, gynecological oncology, critical care, or child and adolescent psychiatry. So those are the options that is the job prospectus of a newly qualified doctor, which, as we can see, is very vast.
Definitely. I think it's definitely very, very vast. The way you put it was actually quite simple. I want to focus now, we're into the last maybe 15 or so minutes of the show, and I want to focus a little bit on the female aspect. We are in Women's Month at the moment, and I just want to turn in my focus to that. If we look at from your side as a Muslim lady and pursuing a career in medicine, before I ask any other question, from your perception of your university, where you are, or maybe from students as a whole in South Africa, are Muslim girls more inclined to take on medicine as a career?
Yes, definitely. I think, you know, especially speaking as a UK resident student, we come from such a multicultural and you know, religiously and culturally accepting university. You know, they always pay cognizance to the fact that we have a body of medical students that are made up of, you know, an extremely diverse range of students. As for women in medicine, the face of medicine is becoming increasingly dominated by females, hence why I say that you know, universities are familiar with the challenges of female students, whether it is the challenges of a Muslim female student, or cultural challenges, or the challenges that may come from choosing to be a mother while studying, or, you know, safety-related challenges amongst many other issues. Universities usually do pay cognizance of this. There are definitely many variations in the representing women in medicine, and I can safely say that Muslim women and even Muslim mothers are definitely within that spectrum. I cannot speak on behalf of institutions to say that special concessions can be made, but what I can attest to is that women's voices and Muslim women's voices with regards to dress code, personal safety, our religious beliefs and reproductive rights, they are indeed heard regardless of our identity label. So I would not deter any Muslim woman from pursuing a career in medicine.
Definitely, and I think the value of having a Muslim female doctor does make it easier for us who maybe want to take our mothers or our wives or sisters to a Muslim female doctor. I think there's definitely value in that. I think one would be more at ease. And also having the background of Islam, where medical treatments can then, you know, for example, taking your medication, Muslim medical doctor would be cognizant of Ramadan and how your medication should then be adapted for taking to, for example, to accommodate our fasting.
Definitely.
And what about now, You mentioned doing internship in community service, probably at a government hospital. What careers exist for, what about people and let's say Muslim females who do not want to go through this path? What other careers are there available as where they can still practice as a medical practitioner but not have to go through the arduous process of becoming a doctor? Allied medical perhaps?
No, if I'm not understanding, do you mean to maybe bypass the internship step? Is that what you mean?
No. I'm actually talking about maybe if people, or let's say Muslim females, don't want to take on medicine, maybe physiotherapy, speech therapy, the options available in these areas.
Yes, the field of health sciences is extremely multifaceted. So there are many health professions that do not require physical contact with patient, or you know, as much patient interaction as the medical degree. Physiotherapy, I would say that physical contact is required. I'm not sure if every institution's policy with regards to choosing your patients during your internship years, whether they would have to be exclusively female or male. But what I can say is from a ward-based experience, not just for the comfort of the doctor, but generally for the patient, you know, they do try and match female doctors or health science students as students to female patients and vice versa. Or in case that cannot be done, a chaperone is usually present. But should one, you know, choose to avoid that nature of the health science profession or medical profession altogether, there are many other you know, medical specialties or even other health sciences degrees that don't require physical contact. And an example off the top of my head would be audiology or speech therapy. Or even to an extent, occupational therapy wouldn't be as hands-on.
All right. You mentioned earlier that you are a third-year medical student. How taxing is your studying at the moment, or how much of your life does your studying take up?
To be candid, pretty much all of my time. Usually it takes my family to remind me of the things that we take for granted, like eating enough or sleeping enough. But you know, medical school is quite enjoyable. When you study medicine for the right reasons, no amount of you know, challenges, no volume of content will weigh you down, because you're doing something that you love. So For me, our days usually start at about 7 in the morning, and we continue with lectures depending on the day. Sometimes we end at 4 p.m., sometimes we end at 5 p.m. Some days are full of, you know, only theory-based lectures. Other days require us to be based at the hospital doing clerking of patients for an entire day. But that is just, you know, that is unique to my experience as a third year medical student, whereby our studies are, I would say, about 70% theory based, so textbook learning, lectures, and then the other 30% would divide it between working in the hospital as well as gaining experience in anatomy by dissecting. And so that is what my day would, or week would look like rather, as a third year medical student. However, going on into your fourth and sixth years, I think it's worth noting that there is a transition in medical school. So we divide the degree into two halves. So 3 years of what we call lab medicine and 3 years of clinical medicine. So in your fourth, fifth, and sixth year, your theory and skills are primarily ward-based, in the form of ward-based experiences and practicals and assessment. So it can be very taxing, but at the same time, like I said, no amount of work will weigh you down if it is truly where your heart lies.
Yeah, I think definitely. I think it's that passion that gives you the extra energy to move at the end of the day and consume as much as you can in terms of information. Now, we've sort of recovered from the COVID-19 pandemic and things are getting back to normal. But one, if anything COVID-19 taught us is how much psychological strain it put on our healthcare professionals, especially our doctors who had to deal with COVID-19 patients, putting themselves on the front line in a lot of risk of contracting COVID-19. We lost a lot of our colleagues as well. How does one psychologically cope or cope psychologically with the demands of a medical career?
So I do agree with you that mental health is of utmost importance, especially in medical school and within the context of the pandemic. You know, regardless of whether you're a senior medical student or a junior medical student, the changes that the pandemic posed, the challenges that the pandemic posed us with, you know, they were innumerable, and I think we were not quite prepared for them. But since the inception of my medical school journey, a recurring mantra is you cannot pour from an empty cup, meaning you cannot heal others or best serve others if you yourself are ill in mind, body, or soul. So as strenuous as the degree is, we are taught repeatedly to cultivate a life outside of medicine, and this need not be all time consuming or require vast amounts of effort or energy. It can be something as trivial as painting or gardening, you know, baking. Find an activity that fosters happiness while simultaneously allowing you to relinquish, you know, all thoughts about work-related issues. You also have to be aware of your own state of mind and emotions, because after an intellectually and sometimes even physically taxing day, you may seek silence and solitude in order to recuperate. So don't hesitate to take that time away from others rather than risking being in a bad mood around your loved ones. And likewise, you need to recognize when time with friends or family are long overdue. Additionally, it's important to how difficult it may be to be a parent or a sibling, friend or partner to someone who is a medical student or doctor, because our loved ones understandably seek quality time or even the assistance and presence of family members. So it's important to always lead your life as a Muslim above all else. And much of a Muslim's duty is to their families. So it's important to make time for your family, be it spending a few hours in the evening with them or even just doing grocery shopping with them. Scheduling and planning also becomes important in medical school. I was someone who was previously flexible and spontaneous, and, you know, I was maladapted to the whole imposition of routines, but medical school definitely does not give you a choice in the matter just due to the sheer volume of content. I always joke with my parents and tell them in medical school you need lists of your lists to keep track. And for me personally, one of my greatest sources of unrelenting support was definitely my family. They kept me grounded, especially when you yourself fail to do things you take for granted. So lean on your family, as if they're anything like mine, they will be your strongest driving factor. So may Allah reward my family for all that they do. Lastly, the greatest source of inner peace comes from, obviously, ibadat. So to perform your salah timelessly, you know, recite dhikr, engage in recitation of Quran. Those, to me, are the greatest grounding tools in my life, even beyond medicine. So to be able to take all your stresses and, you know, your fears and hardships and present them to Allah in the form of dua, it's like being able to package all your stress and leave it in the hands of a creator who you know will not fail you, even when you yourself do not know how you will overcome that stress. And that forms in psychology what we term as an emotional safety net, which is basically the factor that ensures functionality in a person when the mind itself breaks under the pressure of life's challenges. And that is what Islam is to everyone, regardless of whether you're a medical student or doctor. It builds confidence. So even if you lose confidence in yourself, you can be reassured that Allah will guide your hand, and that is enough to keep you going.
MashaAllah, that was a very beautiful answer. We've got a few minutes left. I just want you, I just want you to give a message. We probably have students out there listening, and now we're in August, so it's already getting to the crunch time of their maybe grade 11 or grade 12 year. What message do you have for students who are probably accepted for medicine or probably going to apply for medicine, what message do you have for them?
So firstly, just try your best. Study as hard as you can. You know, do right by your family. Do right by your teachers. Study as hard as you can. Don't give up, no matter where you are, what points in your journey you are, whether you're accepted, whether you're not accepted, whether you know where you want to go in life, you don't know. You know, just have the wakul that whatever is meant for you will come to you, no matter where you are, or, you know, how you may perceive your future, or whatever fears you may have for your exam. Do your best and leave the rest to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
Jazakallah, Sister Maryam. From myself, Radio Islam International, the Islamic Medical Association of South Africa, I want to extend a huge thank you to you for taking your time out to provide us with this enlightening information. And we really appreciate you making this time for us and our listeners. You've really provided us with some great, great insight.
Likewise, Jazakallah for having me on the program.
I mean, you are most welcome. And we wish you all the best for the rest of your third year and the rest of the years to come in your medical career. We wish you everything of the best. May Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala make your studies easy for you. And inshallah, we await the day when you come back to us as the Islamic Medical Association of South Africa as Dr. Maryam Mohammed. And then maybe we can have you again to discuss a few other issues. But until then, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.